Hello, Guitar Smarts listeners. This is an important announcement. Please don't skip ahead. We start this podcast with a special message. Way back in 2021, Guitar Smarts had the pleasure of interviewing the utterly fantastic Matt Long. Matt is a multiple award-winning British blues guitarist and lead singer of the British blues band Catfish and hard rock outfit The Revenant Ones. He joined us for episode number 20 and was a truly gracious guest who spoke about his career, his childhood, guitars, and meeting his hero, Joe Bonamassa. Well, Matt needs your help. Through 2023, Matt has been undergoing treatment for bowel cancer, and his recent prognosis has meant that to extend his life and retain a chance of survival, he needs to seek private treatment outside of the NHS. Matt's family have set up a GoFundMe page that is linked in the Guitar Smarts link tree in the description of this podcast, and we at the Guitar Smarts podcast would like to invite each and every listener to consider donating towards this fund that could well save the life of one of the brightest guitar talents of our generation. Now is the time, folks. Head on over to the link in the description to find the GoFundMe page. Donate what you can. Your donation could save a life. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast.
One of the things I love about these guitar shows as well, right, is not just the fantastic luthiers that are here and the fantastic brands and manufacturers, but guitar stores as well also come and set up, and you get some wicked deals on new instruments, some secondhand stuff. And it's a great place to come and do a bargain hunt, isn't it, to try and get something on a good price. Kind of like you did last year with that. Well, you didn't buy the court at the show, did you? Don't make the same mistake this year.
That's it. That's what my wife said to me when I walked out the door this morning. Well, she didn't say, don't make the same mistake. She went, did you buy something last year? And I went, in all faith, I just went, no, I didn't. And then she remembered and she went, no, hold on a minute. Didn't you find something and then later buy it?
Yeah, so she said, that was a test then.
Yeah, it was a test.
Greetings and welcome back to the Guitar Smarts podcast. It's been a while, but we are finally back. So after a few weeks of downtime due to some illnesses, work trips, and just general busyness, we are finally able to bring you our first episode from the London International Guitar Show 2023 that we attended. It was a fantastic show. We met so many people. We introduced the show to a lot of new listeners. We spent a little bit of money and enjoyed looking at some truly wonderful guitars and amplifiers from some of the UK's finest luthiers. Now, I think it's fair to say that we learned that you don't have to travel far in this country to find someone building absolutely world-class instruments and amps, and we spoke to some wonderful guitar builders that you will hear from in this episode. There was Rich from JWJ Guitars, who, quite frankly, is making the most stunning acoustics I've ever seen and played, and in fact, Kieran left the guitar show with one of Rich's guitars. He did buy it, he's not stealing it, but yes, absolutely incredible acoustic guitars. I've never played anything better, and I played some lovely acoustic guitars in my time. We also spent some time with Carl from Carl Longbottom Custom Guitars. Carl's carpentry roots helped him to launch into a new career as a guitar builder, and it was very clear to us that he's got the gift for it. His guitars were just some of the most stunning electric guitars on the show, for sure, and we were really happy to speak to him. And somebody else whose flair for design and quality of work really caught our eye was Nick Berman from Berman Guitars. Not many people manage to develop their own unique guitar designs that truly work, but Nick's models are absolutely stunning. So enjoy our rambling today on this show, enjoy the interviews with Rich, Carl and Nick, and please go and check them out on their websites, their social media pages, join their mailing lists, you will not be disappointed. On to the usual housekeeping. As always, remember, like and subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss another show. Check out the link tree in the description, that provides you with quick and easy links to our podcast page on Spotify, backing tracks, solo challenges we've recently produced, and some excellent Spotify playlists related to previous shows. But if you click on one link only, make it the Guitar Smarts Guitar Geek Hangout page on Facebook, where you can get to know many other guitar nerds just like us. You can also find a link there to our Buy Me a Coffee page, where you can donate to the show, which is entirely self-funded. Anyway, that's enough from me. Let's get to it.
Cool, we're recording. This is our first time ever. This might even be our first time ever recording face to face. except for last year, actually. No, we did this at last
year. We did last year. We did. But it's been a year.
It's been a year.
It's been a year, mate. Lovely to sit opposite you and actually see you in 3D.
Yeah, I know.
Man, so we're here again at the London International Guitar Show at Kempton Park Racecourse.
That's it.
Wow, what a morning we've already had.
It's been crazy. And I mean, what, we're about an hour and a half into the show. We've been around speaking to people already, handing out some flyers, giving away some free picks, and also looking at some incredible guitars and some incredible products. It's astounding, really, isn't it, that what there is available to see just in like a small area on this floor. We've not even gone up to the second floor yet.
We haven't.
Which is, you know, there's a whole world of stuff to be seen there. These guitar shows are incredible. I love these kind of guitar shows, and you've probably been to them many more times than I have, right?
I've been here a couple more times. Was it your first time here last year when we came?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So I've been a couple of years prior to that, and every year it seems to get better.
Yeah.
It's kept that same kind of feel, which is that kind of like tabletop guitar stand show, where you've got a nice mix of dealers selling cool stuff that you want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always on the hunt for that guitar that's on your list where you're thinking, will I find it here today? And we'll get onto that in a minute, because I almost, I did find something that's on my list, and it wasn't for sale. But then you also get a whole kind of like roster of UK luthiers as well.
Mm.
And we've already tried out some UK luthiery earlier this morning, man.
Yeah.
And I'm blown away by, well, let's give a shout out now already to JWJ Acoustics. And it was Rich, I believe, we spoke to, who very kindly let us take a couple of acoustics that he'd built into the back room and try them out. And my goodness, that's the tone I've been looking for in an acoustic for so long. Listeners of the podcast will know I've been on a hunt for an acoustic guitar, a new one, for quite a while, and have just been a little bit disappointed about what I've been able to find off the shelf, so to speak.
Yeah.
And we'll go and speak to him a little bit later and hear more about those guitars. But for me, it's confirmed one simple thing, which is, one, I'm not going to get it off the shelf, that sound that I'm looking for. And the second thing it's confirmed for me is that there's some incredible luthiers in the UK producing some top-notch stuff, which just is thoroughly exciting. So yeah, that's early insights from the show so far for me. But mate, I'm a little bit overwhelmed. There is so much stuff here to see, and we haven't even scratched the surface, right?
There's so much stuff to see. I mean, there's some big names here as well.
Yeah.
The other thing as well to point out is there's Chapman guitars and, you know, some really big brand names.
Uh-huh.
I'm really quite stoked to see those brand names sharing the same space as some smaller, lesser known brands like JWJ, who really, well, I mean, I find it hard to comprehend that they can, he's producing guitars that it's almost difficult to understand that a person can produce something that perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it kind of looks like something, it's not that it looks like something out of a factory. The guitars almost look like a painting of a guitar.
They're a work of art.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And you forget playing them.
Yeah.
That this is something that somebody has painstakingly refined and tuned, and to get that sound, you know, every little detail on it, he was able to talk about what he was thinking about when he did that and why he thinks it works on this guitar and the tonality of it and how he does the bracing. Anyway, we're going to go and speak to him later on, and I'm going to try my best not to part with lots of my money, but I might fail. I might fail. But as you said, we've only scratched the surface. We've had a quick whiz around the ground floor.
Yeah.
Already bumped into Ben from Crimson Guitars as well.
Yeah.
Had a quick chat with him. He's gonna hopefully come and join us later for a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the whole upstairs floor to do, which we haven't even been up there yet, mate.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I've got that early feeling of there is so much here and not enough hours in the day for me to get around and see it all. But I'm set up and stoked for a really exciting day.
Me too. I've got a little bit of birthday cash to part ways with. Not too much, but there's so much here to look at, so much here to see. One of the things I love about these guitar shows as well, right, is not just the fantastic luthiers that are here and the fantastic brands and manufacturers, but guitar stores as well also come and set up, and you get some wicked deals on new instruments, some secondhand stuff. And it's a great place to come and do a bargain hunt, isn't it, to try and get something on a good price. Kind of like you did last year with that. Well, you didn't buy the Colt at the show, did you? Don't make the same mistake this year.
That's it. That's what my wife said to me when I walked out the door this morning. Well, she didn't say, don't make the same mistake. She went, did you buy something last year? And I went, in all faith, I just went, no, I didn't. And then she remembered and she went, no, hold on a minute. Didn't you find something and then later buy it?
Yeah, so she said, that was a test then.
Yeah, it was a test. So, but she knows we're here working the show today with the Guitar Smarts podcast. So I think she's under the false pretenses that I'm not going to have enough time to go and buy anything for myself. But, you know, we're going to try and do both, aren't we, buddy?
Always find the time.
We're going to try and do both.
Exactly.
So anything that you're on the particular hunt for, we discussed earlier on looking for those bargains and you know, hunting out a deal. Is there something at the top of your mind which would really kind of pique your interest if you saw it here on one of the tables?
Well, I've just built this new Strat, right? So although I'm really happy with how that's turned out, I kind of want to get a new guitar strap for it. Something unique, something interesting, maybe something handmade. Maybe something made with a material that I've not seen before, like that for guitar straps, you know.
Ocelot.
Something interesting. Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. Ocelot. That's it.
It's a lesser used material these
crystal.
Days.
Crystal. Yeah, crystal guitar strap.
Schwartzky.
Yeah, exactly. Something interesting. I would like to accessorize it a little bit. Cause it's pretty ostentatious, isn't it? I mean, I'm just looking at it now. We've got it on the stand.
We have.
And it's a pretty ostentatious looking Strat, to be honest. I actually had this thought the other night. I was like, I've built this gold Strat, I think it's great, and I'm like, I don't know if I can gig it.
Oh no, you
am
can
I not
definitely
look like
gig
a fool
it.
With a gold guitar. Who does he think
no,
he is?
No,
gold guitar.
I mean, I gig a gold top Les Paul every weekend.
Yeah, but gold top Les Pauls are just, you know, the, I mean, this is, yeah, no, you've got a point.
Why not? Why not? Why is a gold Strat any different?
No, you're absolutely right.
Discuss, Guitar Smarts listeners. But so a Strat. That's a very. You're going to get that here. I've
for
already
sure.
seen
loads. Yeah, exactly.
Plenty of Strat manufacturers selling unusual, weird, and wonderful stuff that you can't get off Amazon. You know,
no, absolutely. So, and really, I'm open to things. Some guitar play going on.
I think it's going to get noisy again here, buddy. So we better take a break from the conversation now.
Let's take a breather
and
we'll come back.
Let's go and try some new stuff, and we'll catch up in a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, speak to you in a bit. So we're back again.
We are
after another little wander around.
Whew.
We ventured upstairs this time.
We did,
didn't we?
We did, man. Yeah, my feet are hurting. We're only halfway through the show.
We're only halfway through.
We should have put a step counter on today.
Yeah, we should have done that.
Yeah.
We'll get through a lot of steps. We're still going to get through a lot of steps today. It's a big show. There's a lot of tables, a lot of stands. There's a lot of people here. It's
busy.
Busy, isn't it?
I think this might be the busiest year so far.
Do you think?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. Because I thought maybe everyone's just downstairs, because that's where we've been, right? On the Guitar Smarts stand, which is our first year having a stand here. And about 10 o'clock, it opened up, and I thought, oh, it's a little bit quiet. And then all of a sudden, you realize people were just making their way around, filtering through. And it's a constant stream of traffic now. Lots of people interested in the podcast, which is great. So hopefully we're going to get some new listeners out of this. And then I thought, well, maybe it's quiet upstairs. So ventured up there. No.
It's not quiet upstairs at all, is it?
It's not. It's busy. It's busy, which is great. It's a really good sign that the guitar show is doing really well this year. I reckon more attendees than I've seen in previous years. And that can only be a good thing, right?
For sure.
For you know, guitar in general in the UK.
Absolutely agree. I mean, do you think the pandemic's helped that? Not that I want to mention the P word, but a lot of people picked up the guitar during the pandemic.
No, they
did.
I think that was well recognized. Yeah. I think, well, from what I've read and understood, a lot of guitar manufacturers had some of their best sales years during the pandemic. And certainly when I spoke to Tasty Licks being played in the background.
Yeah, I know.
when I spoke to some guitar shops, they said it had been their busiest years. People are at home, right? Yeah. Working from home, but ultimately also finding themselves indoors more and looking for things to occupy their mind. And what a great time to have learned guitar. So yeah, I think absolutely, Matt, the pandemic has certainly helped revive a lot of people that were thinking about, you know, starting guitar and didn't ever have the opportunity and thought, well, this is the perfect moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I love about this guitar show, whilst a young lad is absolutely wailing away in the background on a 1967 guitar, as by the brand 1967, I should add. It's not a 1967 guitar. It's a beautiful guitar, and he's a great player. But while we were walking upstairs and checking some things out, there were a couple of brands that really stood out to me.
Yes.
that I thought were really interesting. And again, it's one of the things I love about this guitar show is that we find things that we never would have found before, because actually I think there's a lot of brands that are probably guilty of not being great in the marketing department, you know, but they're really good at what they do. And one of the brands was a company called Axlock. And I don't know if you've heard of these guys, but they create a couple of products that... So what I was saying was Axlock accessories. Just a small little company. I spoke to Roy there, R-U-Y. And what he makes is he machines these little... that basically allow you to turn a non-locking string system on a standard guitar into a locking string system.
Okay.
So if you don't have locking tuners,
sure,
you can attach this little thing that goes onto the top of the tuner. It screws down using like multiple little grub screws onto the tuning peg.
Okay.
And then it's got a screw down attachment that locks down onto the string. So you can lock the strings at the top. And he also does some saddles, like normal saddles for like a normal Strat.
Sure.
And with those saddles, you can also then lock the strings. So it's like a full system to turn your guitar into a fully locked, string setup, but it's non-destructive on the guitar. You don't have to do any routing. You don't have to change tuning pegs. You don't really have to do anything other than change the saddles. And interestingly, he said for those people who don't want to change their saddles because they want to keep that vintage look, he's also got an attachment that goes in the bottom of the steel block on the trem.
Right.
So instead of then putting the strings through the hole, you put the strings through this attachment he's created, and then you would then lock the strings down on that attachment, so the strings are still locked, but it's deeper down in the trem. And I thought that's really cool innovation, you know, an option. Right, we're recording again, so. Yeah, we were talking then just as it came into the noisy period of the hour, right?
Rich? We've just realised how the system works. So,
yeah, the system doesn't work, does it? Let's carry on regardless, right?
Yeah.
Loudest thing in this mic's going to be my voice. So. Anyway, so, yeah, so there was that Axlock accessories. I thought it was really cool, really innovative design, and it allows people to maybe... I thought, try out what it feels like and how it works to have locking string mechanisms on their guitar without having to do something destructive. Was there anything that you saw on upstairs that kind of...
There was a few things. So lots of guitar parts and stuff to be trawled through. So the all parts crew are here again.
Gotta love the all parts.
Man,
stuff,
they have just like bargain bin after bargain bin of like stuff, right? So for somebody that sets up guitars regularly for customers, right? That's a treasure trove, right? So I'll definitely be going back there before the end of the day and picking up a list of things that I've run out of. So yeah, they're, that's a great stall up there. There was a stall of a guy representing Jet Guitars,
yeah,
as well, which I saw up there, which I think is new this year for the show.
Yeah,
and I'm going to go and try some of those because I've been meaning to try Jet Guitars for a while. I think we've spoken on the podcast about Jet Guitars, haven't we?
Yeah,
which is this. Super budget Eastern European brand, but some of these guitars are like sub £200, but with really high end specs. Like if I remember correctly, like roasted maple necks, I want to say stainless steel frets, but I'm not sure if that is one of the appointments on it. But I think it might be. Anyway, these guitars are supposed to be incredible value for money. So quite a nice antidote to some of the, you know, tens of thousands of pound vintage guitars that we're seeing here. So yeah, going to go and check out Jet Guitars and try out some of their stuff.
Yeah, I'd like to try some of their stuff too. And one of the things I really like about them is that for what is a relatively budget brand, you know, they're really putting out some kind of like custom color type guitars, you know, the kind of guitars that you know that have colors and finishes that you would pay a lot more money for. They had some really cool looking strats with like just two pickups, like humbucker and a neck, nothing in the middle, with like this kind of part relic finish.
Nice.
And I thought that this is really unique. They're not just another brand that's throwing out the same Les Paul Strat Telecaster copies with maybe just some interesting finishes. They actually look like they've really put some effort and thought into the design and how they want to differentiate themselves. I've never played one. I'd love to go and try one today.
Yeah, me too. So we'll try that out. And then the other thing that I saw upstairs, which piqued my interest and actually harks back to a conversation we've just had with a couple of gentlemen at the Guitar Smart stand here, who they were telling us about some of the difficulties that they have with their hearing and like fingernails and stuff when it comes to guitar playing. We had a whole really bizarre discussion about the human body and the importance of it with relation to guitar playing. But anyway, there's a stand upstairs of guys that are promoting and making custom in-ear monitors and acoustic earplugs. And actually, I've reached the point with my gigging where I really need to start looking after my ears more seriously than I've ever done.
Yeah.
You know, getting on in years, been gigging since I was 17,
yeah.
You know, standing next to drummers, hours on end, it's going to take a toll on my hearing for sure. And that's not a place I want to end up. And I think, you know, as you start to look after your health, as you get a little bit older, you realize, you know, you can only get away with stuff for a certain amount of time. So I've actually been doing a lot of research into getting some custom molded earplugs done. So these guys have got a good sale on here at the guitar show today. They're just called mercurycustomplugs.com. They're a company based out in Crawley. And they're normally £120 for a set of custom in-ear plugs, but they're doing them here at the show today for £110 a set, and they'll take your molds. £10 off today on what could be a lifetime investment, really, isn't it?
To
protect your ears. So had an interesting conversation with them as well, because I was also trying to figure out what the right decibel reduction level was, and I'd read some stuff online and spoken to some other musician friends, and they were kind of quoting figures around the 20 dB mark would be suitable for like pub, social club kind of thing. And you see that on these earplugs, different ratings. I had a conversation with him, and they offer all the way up to like 25, 30 dB reduction, which is like pretty much completely isolating. But he reckoned for a guitar player, about 17 to 19 dB was the kind of territory you wanted to be playing in. Anything more than that, and it's not going to be enjoyable for you as a musician, because it's going to roll off too much high frequency. Anything less than that, and it's not going to give you the desired protection that you need from all those transients from a drum kit. So that was a good piece of knowledge that he shared with me today. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, around 17 dB reduction he would be aiming for, and that would bring me into the safe zone.
Yeah.
And but also give me the pleasure of still getting a nice flat response and hearing my instrument. So yeah, I'm gonna look into that for sure.
I think that's really sensible. Something actually I should do more. Although saying that, over the last couple of years I've been playing fewer gigs on loud stages.
True.
Generally having in-ears where I can really control the volume anyway.
Yeah.
And I like to keep that volume down.
Yeah.
And then the only instrument really on the stage for me that's really producing any volume is the drums. And the fact that I'm using in-ears is already providing me that isolation.
Absolutely.
So I do feel that I've benefited from that. But yeah, I've got mates who have been gigging, you know, really loud guitar amps since their teens, and you know, they're in their early 40s like me, and they are just crippled with tinnitus.
Yeah.
And I'm not at that stage yet. I know I've played enough gigs to have it.
Yeah.
But I don't ever want to get to a stage with my hearing where you know, I can't play guitar properly because I've got tinnitus. And being at this show now, I mean, I can understand why guitarists play very loud, because, you know, there's a lot of amps out there that just sound incredible at high volumes, but it's just not healthy. It isn't healthy for you.
It's not. And it's when you damage your hearing, like you refer to those guys that you know, then you realize the lesson that you should have learned. And unfortunately, yeah. by the time you've learned that lesson, it's too late and it's not reversible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's one of those things, right?
And I kind of, working in the industry I work in, you know, because obviously we talk about guitar and we get together and geek about this because we enjoy playing guitar and gigging at the weekend. But in my professional life, part of that is designing audio systems for you know, for spaces and for rooms and things like that. And we have to design to a particular standard. And, you know, 85 decibels and above is when you will, you know, if you are subjected to anything that's 85 dB or above for a prolonged period of time, you know, an hour or two, then you can start suffering from hearing loss. And that can be hearing loss at low and high frequencies, depending on what it is you're hearing. To give you an example of what 85 dB really is, just imagine being in a pub on a Friday night, multiple conversations going on. You just stood there. You know, if you're talking to your mate, and generally you have to kind of lean in a little bit more usual. That's well above 85. That's 80. You know, if you spend 2 or 3 hours in a pub on a Friday night, that will contribute to hearing loss. So
imagine a live band superimposed on top of that already.
Exactly.
And then being in that band.
That's right.
In the eye of the storm, as it were. Good Lord, it's this isn't talked about enough. This is something I'd like to pick up on another episode, actually, in a more quiet environment. Because I think it is something we need to take a little bit more seriously. And actually, I'm going to be doing some trialing and demoing of different in-ear acoustic plugs, because there's a wealth of them out there in the market, and there's a huge variance in price range.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually auditioning a few of those different sets at the moment. So I'm going to draw up a shortlist for our listeners to check out for themselves. But we'll revisit this health and safety episode a little bit later down the line, right? But it's important stuff.
That is what it is.
It is important stuff. So that was the other stuff upstairs. And there's some just more fantastic Luthery going on. And some really exciting guitars here today. The Burst Believers chaps are up there.
Yeah.
I've eyeballed the Bernie Marsden Beast. As well as
you've eyeballed Bernie's Beast.
don't look at it right directly. Wow. Unsurprisingly, the busiest corner of the upstairs section. I thought, what are all these people, thronged around this particular corner of the room? And then as you get closer, you realize it's the Beauty of the Burst book display stand, and then a whole plethora of beautiful vintage instruments. And it's quite interesting because as your eyes scan around that section and the stand, it's pretty quiet around the kind of vintage SG, vintage 335 kind of area. And then all of a sudden, it is just that Gibson Les Paul corner where it's just...
The bustling crowd is throbbing around Bernie's Beast, is that what you're saying?
Oh, damn you.
Sorry.
Damn you. But do you know what? I walked away kind of laughing and chuckling to myself, and I am a huge Les Paul fan. Yeah. Like, huge. Oh, I've been coveting many Les Pauls here today. So arguably, that part of the guitar show should be the most exciting to me. But it kind of tipped over, I must admit, to a point of ridiculousness for me, where I just kind of walked away chuckling, going, it's only a guitar, folks.
It's not only a guitar, though, Kieran. See, do you know what? I bumped into Danny Lean earlier on, right outside ATB stand, where they've got the vintage Les Pauls for sale as well. Though they've got a few Bursts there today.
They do,
You know, they're at £300,000. You know, you stood there and you're able to kind of, you know, I could grab it and run out the door if I wanted. I'm assuming there's a sniper, you know, or something like that. ATB have a sniper outside. But obviously I wouldn't do such a thing. But do you know what? I had this sudden, this thought, and I think I get it. Right? I think I get why these things are so expensive, because they're kind of the Stradivarius of our time, of our generation.
Yeah,
and we're getting to that point now where, you know, there are violinists in the world who own Stradivarius violins that are worth millions of dollars, that are hundreds of years old, made by that particular person, and they're deemed to be the greatest. And we're still at a time in history, right, where, you know, there are still people alive that were, you know, obviously, that were around when those guitars were built.
Sure.
You know, we're still actually really in the kind of first generation of electric guitarists, in a way, if you think about it. It's less than a century since the first proper electric guitars. You know, we haven't had that history like Stradivarius Instruments had for years and years. And I think the burst is that thing. That's the thing that a few hundred years' time, that'll be the Stradivarius.
It will.
I kind of get it in that sense.
Oh, no, I get that.
You know what I mean?
I do get that. I do. And I want to buy into it. And I do buy into it to a certain extent.
But, yeah.
I don't know. It seems... I don't know. Why just that guitar? Right?
Yeah.
There were other great guitars made in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, exactly.
And I say this as a huge Les Paul fan, right? Mm-hmm. And of course they're pretty and of course they're beautiful. But, you know, who knows? I'm going to go up there and have another look, and we're going to take some pictures next to them for the guitar geek audience out there so that they can see how close we got to sniffing or in a stealing distance, as you describe it, of these guitars. But
stealing distance.
There's a point. There's clearly a point of diminishing returns, and there's clearly a point where it is just a piece of wood. But I do think you are right in terms of these things are only going to keep going up in value and going up in reverence. And so, you know, what will seem like a silly amount of money now, you know, $250,000, $400,000, I don't know, whatever they're going for.
Yeah.
You know, in another 50 years' time, I'm sure that will be looked back on as an absolute bargain. If you could have snapped one up for that price.
And the crazy thing is, as well, is you compare it to that Stradivarius kind of analogy. You know, people buy those violins from the entire career of that person.
Yes.
Who, you know, all the years they've made those violins.
Yeah.
Gibson only made these bursts for 2 years.
True.
2 years of their history, from 58 to 60.
And then they stopped because no one was buying them.
They stopped. Exactly. They even brought in another design called the Les Paul, which was obviously the SG.
The SG
originally was the new Les Paul.
That's right.
You know, the early 60s Les Pauls were what we call SGs now.
Mm.
That's how unpopular that guitar was back then. Isn't that just bizarre? You know, but to reiterate your point as well, it is just a guitar. I mean, it's constructed like a cricket bat. It's, you know, there to be used for a purpose. You know, it shouldn't be the cost of a house, or should it? I don't know. Joe Bonamassa doesn't seem to mind.
He doesn't. He doesn't. God bless Lord Bonamassa.
Lord Bonamassa. Another quick thing I wanted to ask you about, because you taught me about this, was a particular string, if you like, of Gibson guitars.
Oh yeah, we had a
chat. Was it the your mama? Sorry, no, that's a kind of joke, isn't it?
It's
your
a kind
mama
of,
joke.
Sorry. Kind of insult.
What
was
it?
So it's called Yamano. So there's a couple of, as I said, I'm a huge Les Paul fan, and I've coveted a couple of Les Pauls here already today.
Yeah.
Thankfully, not the 1959 or 1960 variants, as beautiful and as unaffordable for me as they are. But there's a couple of more recently made, kind of 2010 to 2014, I think one was, Yamano Les Pauls. So Yamano, we had a discussion about it at the stand, because you said, "What's this thing Yamano written on these labels? What is that?" So my understanding of this is, and I think I'm right in saying, Yamano was effectively the Japanese distributor of Gibson guitars. And this goes all the way back to the 80s, I believe, where there was a huge marketplace in Japan for American-made Gibson Les Pauls. And the Japanese and the distributor, Yamano, were highly discerning and would only ever accept the best examples, and would quality control and check everything that came into shipment, and would simply reject things that weren't up to a standard that they felt was required for their customers. And we're not talking about custom shop stuff, or Murphy Lab didn't even exist at this point. We're talking about standard production line items, right? And that's transcended all the way from the 80s all the way through to modern time, where effectively guitars that are made in the Gibson factory in America are often subdivided into models that are deemed suitable for sending to Yamano in Japan to be sold on in Japan. So what does that mean in reality? It means these guitars are generally considered to be that little step extra in terms of the quality of tops that you get, the overall finish, the tonality of them. And again, for a, see, look, I'm helping create these silly myths and legends around this by describing this to our audience. But this is how it is, right? You can't really get them outside of Japan because these were guitars sent from America directly to Yamano in Japan for that local domestic market. So when you see them over here, that's even more rare, where you go, oh, there's some Yamano guitars, Gibson ones, but now not in Japan. So when you see those, you're generally paying a higher price for what is a superior instrument, even though it's, for all intents and purposes, a standard factory run, off the shelf guitar.
So basically, the distributor in Japan kind of created their own quality kind of threshold.
Right.
For these guitars, they obviously knew that there was a market for Gibson guitars in Japan.
Right.
But did that stem, do you think, from the fact that it's such a discerning marketplace already in Japan because they're such great craftsmen of their own instruments that they wanted to make sure that the US models were better or as good as what people
That's a great
used
question.
To in Japan?
That's a great question. I actually don't know the full truth behind that, and I'm going to have to go and look up about this and just make sure. I'm going to have to go and fact check myself. But
yeah.
I think the time period this dates back to probably almost predates the Japanese luthry that we become accustomed to.
Yeah.
So I think it was literally just the fact that they just wanted the best for their customers and would simply flatly reject and send anything back to Gibson at Gibson's own cost. They would just reject stuff and say, it's not good enough. So I don't know how that then ties into the whole Japanese luthry market, which we've talked about on the show before as being exceptional. You know, the Japanese in their own right make phenomenal instruments nowadays, but I don't know how those timelines line up. But suffice to say, there's a couple of Yamano Gibson Les Pauls here today that are going for around, well, one of them's up for £1,500, and that's I think that's a 2014-2015 traditional Les Paul.
Right.
So, you know, that's basically the retail price of that guitar as it would have been at that year point. So that's a nice bargain for what is effectively a really nice topped instrument there. And then there's another Yamano one that we've seen, which has got this beautiful kind of mellowed honey burst on it, but it's even more subtle than that, and it just looks stunning. And that is going for like £2,000. So, you know, have one of those any day of the week. They are absolutely incredible examples of a Gibson Les Paul from obviously more recent times, but with that Yamano quality control stamp of approval on them. And you can tell just by looking at them that they're something different.
Are you going to try one out?
Potentially.
I think you should.
Potentially.
Because I mean, not just because I know you covet those guitars, or at least there's something around the mythology of those, particularly those ordered guitars, you know, from that distributor. But I'd love to hear from someone like you who knows a Gibson Les Paul well and how they should feel and play. Be interesting to see what you think about them, whether, you know, there's something about them really, because I think £1,500 for a second-hand Les Paul standard these days is good money.
It is good money. I mean, that's what I've got a couple of Les Paul traditionals. One from 2009 and one from 2013.
Yeah.
Both Les Paul traditionals, which I think was one of the best models that Gibson made in recent times, because as the name suggests, the traditional had all of those traditional specs that we grew up loving and coveting.
Yeah.
That then got kind of bastardized and modernized in what is the Les Paul standard now. So, but this was effectively all those original Gibson appointments that you wanted on a Les Paul. Neck profiles, tuner shapes, kind of the tops and the finishes, all of that kind of stuff. So, and they, both of mine, I got from Guitar Village in the UK for £1,500, brand new. I think they actually retailed at the time at about 1,800, maybe 1,700, and I got a nice discount because the guys there are good to me. But they've gone up in price, as Les Pauls do, and as the secondhand market that we've commented on often plays silly tricks to people. So I was quite surprised to see one here for £1,500, because I know they're selling for more than that. And, yeah, and this is a Yamano badged one as well. So, I mean, that would be at that price, a good purchase if you're
good
in
investment.
The market. Yeah, I think so. Yep. I think so. Yeah.
It certainly was a beautiful guitar. Because I think you said you'd seen a couple, but I think I remember seeing just one of them, and I thought it was a beautiful looking Les Paul. So you can definitely tell that they were choosy about which guitars came through. Mm. So that's an interesting thing. I think we're going to take a break now. Let's take a break to have another bit of a stroll around. Let's see who we can get on for an interview as well, maybe at the stand. But good so far, I think.
Mate, good, really good so far. Time is flying quickly. We're already at the halfway point. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyable. And we do need to go and spend some cash on some stuff as well.
That does need to happen fairly
Let's
soon,
go do that.
Let's go and do that. Let's go and spend some money. Right. Let's go and see if we can grab someone for a chat. And then after that, we'll go and have a wander around and just do random conversations here and there and everywhere, yeah?
Sounds good, buddy.
Brilliant. All the best. Right, thanks.
Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you are a regular listener, then you should definitely come and join us on our Facebook group, The Guitar Geek Hangout. Go and join The Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook now before you carry on with the podcast.
Okay, so look, we're here at the JWJ guitar stand with Rich. Absolutely the best guitar that I've tried so far today. One of your acoustics, in fact, two of your acoustics. Tone for days, absolutely playable. This is like superb UK luthier at its finest. So Rich, how's the guitar show going for you today so far?
Yeah, pretty well. Yeah, plenty of interest, you know, chatting to plenty of people. It's always nice to meet people, you know. This is the furthest south I come on these guitar shows, so it's nice to meet different, you know, see different faces, meet different people, you know. It's been a good day. So
fantastic. So look, we had a chat earlier on, and you were telling me about the process that you go through making these guitars and that relationship that and feedback you get during the build process, which is something I found really fascinating to listen to. And we kind of put that in context of some of the guitars that you get off the shelf. Do you want to just tell us a little bit more about how that journey is for you when you're crafting and kind of tonally balancing these guitars? How do you do that?
I think yeah, what we were saying earlier, you know, the difference between someone like myself or these other guys here today, you know, with the hand-built acoustics as opposed to your factory-built, is that we're kind of trying to get the best out of every single piece of wood rather than just following a template. You know, you're trying to match up. So I was just chatting to another gentleman, actually, the orchestra that I've got there has got quite a tight, close grain on the top. So I'll find a bit of bracing wood for that I feel is a bit lighter, and it's going to give it more flex back. Whereas I think one of the ones that you play has got really wide open grain, which generally will give you a louder sound. So I found some tighter grain, and you know, you can tune the top, so you can different thickness, the way that you adjust the bracing, the way that you carve the braces, you know, you can do all of that stuff. And then the good thing is that in a few weeks' time, you're going to get the feedback from that when you've finally got the spraying done and wait for a cure, and then you put the strings on. So you're always getting the feedback from what you build, and that's kind of how you learn and hopefully develop and hopefully improve all the time, you know? So
I tell you what, I'm not joking, guys, when I say that I've been auditioning acoustic guitars to add to the collection for the last few months, and I've been trying a bunch of stuff out, and I kid you not, these guitars from JWJ that I've tried today are hands down the best guitars that I've played in the last few months of trying to find the perfect acoustic guitar. I know Rich is going to try and make me a sale later on, but you know, I highly recommend you guys to check these out. Rich, if people want to find out more about your guitars and what you go through to build them, where can they go to get in touch with you and look at what you do?
Well, the website's first place, jwjguitars.co.uk. My number's on there. You're always welcome. Just give me a call and chat about guitars. Come up and see me in Shropshire. Have a cup of tea in the kitchen. Play some guitars. And I've also got, we've got three retailers at the moment. So down here we've got in Ringwood, Oasis Music. Nice place to visit again. Then sort of just over the border from me in Wales is Knighton Music Centre. And they just sell loads of the thing. I can't keep up with the orders from those guys. And bit further north, Promenade Music in Morecambe. So yeah, plenty of places to go and try them. Yeah, but like I say, give me a call, you know, have a chat. I always like chatting guitars.
Yeah, we should do that. We should come down, shouldn't we? We should go head up, sorry, and visit. And actually, yeah, go and have a chat, see the workshop maybe. We'll do a full episode on it. I think that would be good to do. Get on the road. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, anything else from you, Kieran? Or
what's the best price you can do on that second one? I tried. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to haggle live on air. But I honestly, check these guys out. JWJ Guitars, absolutely superb. Cheers, Rich.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So we're here with Carl from Carl Longbottom Guitars. That right? Fantastic. So we were walking around earlier on, Kieran, and a listener of ours, actually John, pointed us towards you, Carl, and said to come and check your guitars out. He was particularly upset that one of your guitars had already been sold, this Tele down here. But I think some of your guitars are some of the more unique ones that we've seen today. Really beautiful instruments. Could you tell us about what got you into guitar building and how long you've been doing it, both for yourself and professionally?
For myself, I started about 2004-ish, and it was, as a joiner by trade, it was an itch to scratch. I stumbled upon a book by Melvin Hiscox, How to Build an Electric Guitar, I think it was titled, and it was a brilliant book, not over complex, just filling the little gaps of information, like truss rods, etc., what are obvious. Then it's finding out where to buy materials, where to buy fret wire from, etc. I actually bought a catalogue to buy parts out of. I had to buy a catalogue to then buy parts. That was that sort of day.
Before the internet.
Well, the internet might have been around, but I didn't have it. It was back at Guitarist Magazine, Touchstone Tonewoods, I think it was. Sent them £4 check, I think it was. Check, we're going back to them days. Buy the catalogue so I can see what I can buy off them. Brilliant. So I've been building guitars for myself since around 2004. And what, 4-ish years ago, I made a couple of guitars for Mick and Don at Fat Pedal Show, sent them there. And then when they eventually arrived and were seen on the show, I was blown away by the response. And I basically thought, well, I'll be dead soon and I don't like my day job. So let's go for it. Let's turn this into a full-time business. So that's what I'm in the process of now. So I've been gearing this up for a good 2 years now. I've been on show since the beginning of last year, going around the show scene. And then we're just slowly building and building more and more guitars and trying to build something slightly different from the norm.
I think you are doing that. I mean, people are coming up to our stand and telling us about your guitars, which is kudos to you, right? So we came out and had a look at them, and you are doing something that's just that bit different. Each of them looks obviously based and influenced by certain designs, but still unique in their own way and with their own particular character. So what do you think makes your guitar special and stand out? Other than obviously the way that they play and sound, what is it that you say that's the stamp that I put on a guitar?
It depends. I've like got an S and a T and a junior style, a standard, which are standard, but they're tweaked standards. The body shape of a T is slightly altered. I see it as I'm not trying to redesign the wheel. I'm trying to design some new spokes. I don't want this radical guitar with no head and things like that. No, never. But then I've got my own, sounds like my Fulvia Rum offset, etc., what I've built myself. But my S&T, I do them in solids, but I also do them as hollows. So I've got hollows with full body contours. And with the S-Type, with my S4, I don't think there's anyone else building a hollow S4 with body contours and a trem. I think I'm unique in that. I may not be, but I'm unaware of anyone else doing it. I think the closest I'm aware of is Fender did the Eric Johnson Strat with the F-All, which was the F-All on a Strat, to me, didn't work. But aesthetics, we all see different things. But yeah, I think it's tweaks, it's subtleties, it's your own headstock. It's a little bits like that what draw you in. I see many guitars and I'm going, I like this, I like that. And you get to a certain point and you think, oh no, why did you do that? And some people think of my guitars, because we all see different things and we like different things. We all like different musics. It's a similar vein in my eyes.
So did your kind of desire or, you know, the impetus to get into building guitars, did that, for a lot of luthiers, it seems to be they could never quite get what they wanted out of a off-the-shelf guitar and they decided to build their own. Is that true of you as well, maybe? Or
no, it was really just, could I do this? And that was my starting block. Could I build a guitar? So I built my first guitar. It's on my website with this. I've dubbed it the Ascona. And it was just, it's my starting block. But I didn't start with a kit. I started set neck, set of humbuckers, four controls. That's where I want to go. I think a kit's great for someone who isn't a woodworker as a background. If you want to try it and you're an accountant maybe for a living, but you really, it's an itch to scratch for you, buy a kit, absolutely. Then develop, make your own body with a pre-bought neck. Keep developing your skills. But for me, well, I shape wood all day long, just a different guy. So I'll just jump into it and do what I want to do. So it was just like that. And then just keep different ideas. That's the problem. I keep having ideas in my head for different guitars. When I started going to shows, beginning of 2021, I had 4 demo models. I've now 8 demo models. So it's just like, so someone asked me about the bass. You want to be making basses? And it was a guy I met at a few guitar shows. I keep meeting him. And he said, you want to be making basses? I said, what would I make in a bass? I'm not a bass player. I said, so I quizzed him on what he thought made a good bass. A week later, the idea was still rolling around my head. So next thing, I have a bass. So it just, too many ideas, not enough money to develop them.
What are you still learning about this? Are you winding your own pickups now? Are you creating your own hardware as well? What's next in terms of your kind of development as a builder and a designer?
No, I'm not hardware. No, it's too difficult. It's full engineering skills. I have worn a few pickups over the years, but to be honest, I didn't find it interesting. And most of my guitars have either Radio Shops or Sunbear pickups, and they're both brilliant companies, brilliant people, brilliant products. And I think it's also a draw to my guitars that has a Sunbear pickup in, you know, stellar top line things. And even if I develop good pickups myself, it doesn't interest me. It is quite a mundane thing. So I'm quite happy to buy top quality pickups off quality companies who are really good people as well. That is my, there's many other good pickup makers within the country, never mind worldwide, but you form relationships with people. And that's where you think, yeah, I can get in touch with Stuart and say, with a bass, I said, I'm wanting, I didn't want to do PJ because everyone does PJ. So I've done a split P with a 51 P, but as a humbucker. So I said, Stuart, I've got this idea. You know, do you think you can make this work for me? He went, of course I can. I'll just tweak windings here and might change my guitars. I just said, I'll leave it with you, Stuart. This is your area of expertise, not mine. This is the ballpark area I want. You know, I don't go for high output pickups, etc. As a ballpark, you know the bass what I want. Leave it with him. Brilliant. What a guy.
I think that's a lovely thing when you can focus on the bit that you're passionate about, right? Which is the design, the joinery elements of it, challenging yourselves with new designs, but then partner with other people that you respect and support them in their discipline and what they're great at doing to churn out these guitars, which are, I must say, absolutely exquisite. They really are gaining a name for themselves. There's so many people that have come up to our stand to say, oh, you need to go and speak to this chap about his guitars. They are truly special. So, you know, kudos to you. Where can we find out more? Where can our listeners go to maybe purchase one of your fine instruments if they're interested?
Well, firstly, thank you very much for your kind words there. My website is carlongtoguitars.com and Instagram, I'm Carl Long with some custom guitars. And it's Carl with a K to be different.
Fantastic. Carl, thank you so much for your time. Really great. I hope that you continue to have success, and more than anything, continue to enjoy what you're doing. I think the reasons why you're doing it, you know, are really commendable. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
So we're here with one of our neighbours here at the guitar show, just a couple of stands down from us. This is Berman Guitars. Nick, nice to meet you. Your guitars are absolutely beautiful. I've never seen guitars quite like this actually before, having a look now. Can you tell us a little bit more about Berman Guitars and how long you've been going, and a little bit about it?
Okay. I'm based in the middle of Suffolk, a little village called Ixworth, and I've been building guitars full time for about 3 years, on and off for some time longer, but decided to make the brave bold to going full time building and repairing guitars sometime around 2000-2001. And I started off the lineup with two models. So I've got the Canto and the Solar. The Canto is my double neck. Double cut model, and I don't have a double neck model. I don't know what I'm talking about.
As inspiration just struck, maybe all of a sudden.
Yes, you know. I think I'm going to rush right home and build a coffee table monstrosity. Yes. and Solo is a single cut version, sort of based on loosely on other vintage designs, and just sort of trying to modernize them and making them more what I would play, I think. So something that's a bit more inspiring, but more modern music, I think. That's sort of the idea. So, and all custom options, so custom pickups, custom woods, even scale lengths. I've got a multi-scale model. So trying to do a variety of things to suit people. But yeah.
I mean, they're absolutely beautiful instruments. I find the wood choices that you've got, you really look like you're kind of displaying the wood that you've chosen really beautifully, as well as having these interesting finishes. What kind of wood choices are you making with these guitars?
Okay, a couple of them I've got black limber backs, maple tops, like poplar wood, because it's a slightly lighter wood, but it's good for solid finishes with the Solar Junior. And others I've got ash bodies, which is a nice figured wood. And this one here is topped with Wenge, it's got a Wenge top.
I mean, they look fantastic.
I really think you hit the nail on the head where you said they've got a kind of homage to some more traditional design, but with some very modern kind of influences as well. They're really tastefully done. I've not seen anything like this at the show today. This one on the end here is particularly catching my eye. It's got that kind of the first thing that comes to mind is like Bumblebee from the Transformers. It's just this incredible black and yellow finish on it, the Canto. And I must say, actually, having looked at the price point that you're pitching these guitars at, that's a very reasonable price point for a luthier built guitar. I mean, it's stunning. I mean,
right. Yeah. Guitar in disguise.
That's it.
maybe that's more.
I like that. Yeah.
So I think I'm pricing them reasonably. Right now, I just want to get my guitars out into the wild, into stages and recording studios, and I want people to be playing them really. And in fact, I've got a couple models here that are on even more ridiculous prices. So again, I just want to, you know, the kids have grown up, want them to move out of the house, and just that's how I see it. So I want people to be able to play them really.
I think one of the things that I can see that you've done, I really love this Solar Junior that's at the middle here at the front. Again, incredibly well priced, actually. I mean, made to order there for £900. But what I really love about it is that for those people that love that single pickup kind of, junior guitar design, you've got that, it accounts for that, but you've made some really nice touches. I really love where you've got the jack input on that at the bottom there. The hardware looks absolutely fantastic. Are you kind of working with somebody for hardware design, or are you using things that are available?
Yeah, I use mainly Goto hardware, Goto tuners and bridges. As for pickups, so far I've used Sun Bear pickups and Bare Knuckle. We've got Bare Knuckle bootcamp models on this one. I've been really happy with my choices so far. So far it's been working. And the single P90, I think, is a supremely underrated combination of underrated pickup. So you really can get just about anything you need out of the one pickup.
A lot of people say it's to do with the fact that there isn't another pickup on the guitar that's interacting with the strings at the same time, apparently. I don't know how true that is, but I think it's a fantastic... So it is all you need. You know, there's a lot of people that got away with and only use a single pickup. What was your kind of like a skill set before this? Have you always been like into producing guitars, or... what have you always done, like carpentry or things like that?
Well, I've been building guitars for myself on and off for a number of years. I started building my first when I was in art school, so I couldn't really afford a real one, so I thought I'd make one. So I thought, well, Brian May's made one. Why? How hard can it be? And I found out. But after that, I did a number of repairs for friends and friends of friends, and it sort of snowballed from there. And then over lockdown, I decided that I was going to can my office job and do what I always wanted to do. And thinking life is too short, I thought I'd just, why not build guitars? You know, make sawdust.
That you wouldn't believe how common a theme that is. I mean, that's so many people have said that today. JWJ around the corner, Carl Longbottom. They've all said the same thing. They've all said, do you know what? Life's too short. I want to do this thing I'm passionate about full time. And it really shows, you know, I think it's very clear that you're passionate about this. I love these guitars. I love the way they look. I think they're fantastic, you know.
I do too. Nick, tell us where our listeners can find out more about your fantastic guitars, take a look at some of what you've got for themselves, and maybe have a conversation with you about trying one out to buy. Where do they need to go?
Website is bermanguitars.com. I'm on Instagram, Berman Guitars, or you can also call me. My phone number's on the website and on Instagram. Email me, and who come play a guitar, give me a ring, drop me an email, and we'll sort something out.
Perfect. Well, can't thank you enough, Nick. I think it's fantastic. We hope to get many more eyes on your guitars, and thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening. Next week, we will be back with our interview from the Guitar Show with Ian Edwards, founder of the company Guitar Breaks. It's a really interesting interview, and if you like what you hear, then why not give the rest of our shows a good listen too? And if you love our podcast and are a regular listener who wants to support the show even more, then consider buying us a coffee over on our Buy Me a Coffee page. Anyway, best wishes. See you next time on the Guitar Smarts podcast.